We've got Gene Bolduc here in the studio, the host of the Weekend Water Cooler, and it is time for Thing Not a Thing, the game show in which Gene and I take a look at everything that has people upset on social media this week, and we ask ourselves, is it a thing or is it not actually a thing? There's a lot of things this week.
Yeah. Let's dispense with the local thing. Silent Sam's still a thing.
Still a thing, yes.
So it's going to be a thing for a while. And, you know.
100%, yeah.
It's hard not to be insulting toward the people who are trying to advocate for restoring the statue to where it was, making these claims of, you know, historic, you know, recognition of Confederate soldiers and their sacrifice and so forth. And I guess one of the things that I read on social media that puts it in good perspective for me is, how would you feel about somebody putting up a statue to honor the terrorists from 9/11 who made that great sacrifice for their cause and flew those planes into the buildings in September? I don't think anybody would want to see that built. And I still say, I don't think anywhere in this state or anywhere in the South you could get approval to build a statue to General Sherman or Grant, even though Grant went on to be the president of the United States.
Well, this is the thing, and we've kind of talked about this going back now years, because this the debate has been going on. The Durham statue got toppled a year ago, and now this round of demonstrations around Silent Sam. People can say, oh, it's about remembering and why are you whitewashing history? Two things about that. First of all, the act of whitewashing history took place 105 years ago when the statue got put up in the first place.
That's right.
That was part of a very conscious act to whitewash history and
literally.
To make it very literally in that case, and to reinterpret the after the fact, the history of the Civil War and the reason for secession, to completely tell a false narrative, which then was such a successful endeavor that it became the accepted narrative for most of the 20th century until finally historians started looking back at the original documents again, which is also one of the reasons why there is such a generational gap in terms of this debate. The people that are making the argument that, oh, this is whitewashing history and we need to be telling the real history of the Civil War. A lot of these are people who went to school in the 50s and 60s and early 70s when that false lost cause narrative was still being taught to kids in elementary school and high school. We've grown beyond that. We've recognized now that that's a false narrative, but someone who went to school in the 60s and learned that as their narrative, I can understand why
and their ancestors, many of them, their ancestors died in that war, and they do not want to hear, I totally understand this, they don't want to hear discussion of of them dying for nothing, or that they weren't brave, or things of this nature.
But sometimes we have to hear things we don't want to hear.
I think that if your family was taking up arms for the Brits at Lexington and Concord against my relative who was working for the rebels and was, you know, fighting for independence, you know, I'm sorry, but these are not equal.
Yeah.
These are not going to be equally recognized and honored. I think that around Boston, there are statues of Paul Revere, not of the king.
Yeah. There was a statue of the king in New York City. It got torn down by the people of New York City 5 days after the Declaration of Independence was signed.
Right.
July 9th, 1776.
Yeah, not 50 years later when they said, oh, look what a mess we're in. We've got to...
Right.
We should blame the rebels.
But there is that history of tearing down statues. It happened in New York during the American Revolution. So that's thing number one. Thing number two is when you put a statue up in the middle of the town square or in a prominent place like McCorkle Place, you are not doing that in order to remember remember the person or the event. You're doing it to celebrate the person or the event.
Right. And in that case, it was to stake out that border of the campus.
Yes.
Facing north and to say, you know, this is a protection of the campus. And you know, we have to, it's not about ignoring history. It's just about closing that chapter of it and saying, you know, and now it's in the history book and it's closed.
Yeah.
And we recognize it. It's recorded. It needs to exist somewhere, but not there. Not anymore.
Where do you think it should go?
I think it should go straight to a blue ribbon task force filled with people who don't look like you and me to enter into research and scholarship about what the right thing is to be done with these items.
Yeah.
And I think that something that is akin to the Holocaust Museum should be done with Confederate memorials. To house them somewhere and tell the story of how the Daughters of the Confederacy perpetrated this as a narrative for America to misremember its own history, a stunningly successful misinformation campaign, including naming streets in Hillsborough and all around Chapel Hill and all over the place for Confederate generals and so forth. And my son lives on a street that's named after a Confederate general. Mm-hmm. And slave owners, and there are schools in Orange County that are named after major slave owners. And I don't think they should rename the schools necessarily. But I think that wherever there's a plaque that says, this is why this school is named Cameron Park, that should go with it.
Yeah, or just down the road where you've got the Burwell School Historic Site,
right,
which they're spending the entire year celebrating the bicentennial of Elizabeth Keckley.
Right.
It's not the Keckley School, it's the Burwell School.
The Burwell
it was named
School.
After the family who owned the slaves as opposed to the slaves. And
right, exactly.
That's standard practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that probably should be challenged too. But I you know, long story longer is that is still a thing, and it's going to be a thing, you know, until my grandson's children are done with it. I think it's going to be a thing for a long time.
Up a level to national news. What do you want to start
with? I don't know. Has anything happened this week? It's been a pretty sleepy week, hasn't it?
I don't know. Well, Trump said he fell asleep, so.
Trump said today he fell asleep during Obama's speech earlier today.
He didn't watch Obama's speech.
Well, you know. There's a lot of big words in Obama's speech, so I can understand.
So
big words like impeachment, maybe.
Let's start with the op-ed that everyone's talking about in the New York Times.
Well, let's start one day before with Bob Woodward's book, Fear.
Okay.
His book, aptly named Fear. You know, he released this audio tape of him talking to Trump on August 14th. And he, I think, gave a clinic in that telephone call about how to talk to Donald Trump and not have him run over you. Because he said to him, you know, I really wanted to talk to you about this book. I wanted to interview you because I wanted to give you the opportunity to respond to these things. And Trump just ran around and around in circles saying, nobody ever told me. Nobody ever called. I didn't know. I had no idea. Who did you talk to? He said, well, I talked to this person and that person. And he said, oh, well, they never told me. And he said, oh, well, you know, are you saying that they're lying to me, that they said that they talked to you and would try to arrange this? And he said, oh, well, you know, no, I don't know. We'll just see. It's just going to be a negative book. That's a shame. Too bad. I'm used to it. And then he's been tweeting his brains out ever since, proving that, of course, he's not used to it at all.
Of course.
That book, I think, is going to provide us with the gold standard of reporting in terms of it being fact-based, well-sourced, most sources named. And I think that we can take that book as being what really happened and has been happening in the Trump White House. It probably doesn't tell us anything gigantic that we didn't already know. It's more that it provides a golden layer of credibility to many of the other stories that we've been told. And then immediately following comes this op-ed, which I'll just put it out there on the record, I think came from Kellyanne Conway. She and her husband Her husband's been openly critical of Trump all along.
Right.
And she and her husband want to become the, you know, Mary Madeline and James Carville, the next iteration of that after she's out of government. And I think she's trying to lay the groundwork for that because she knows her boss is going to be impeached in about 4 months.
I'm leaning towards not a thing on Woodward's book, but convince me otherwise. What's the difference between Woodward's book and the other two giant tell-all books?
Fire and Fury
and
or
whatever Omarosa's book
and
is called.
Unhinged.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, well, the difference is, Bob,
this shows you how much I've been following this. I don't even know the title
of her
book.
I'll tell you the simple difference. It's two Pulitzer Prizes and a guy who brought down Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
It's credibility. It's entirely credibility. I mean, you ask Michael Wolff, did that really happen? And he says, yeah, you know, might as well have. You know, I mean, he's like, well, that's what I heard. I mean, that's his standard of how he's checked facts
and so forth.
I put a lot of stock in Bob Woodward.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
Okay, so over to the op-ed, and I don't know who wrote it. I think it's very funny that everyone is, and I think you said it on social media today, everyone is denying that they wrote it, but no one is denying
somebody
wrote it and that it's true.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really were going to, you know, vociferously defend your boss, you would be out there holding a press conference saying, this is absolutely outrageous. None of this is true.
They're going back to Woodward, the concept of the non-denial denial, right? Yeah.
But instead, they're just lining up as fast as they can down to the acting director of the EPA, who probably doesn't even know where the paper clips are yet, is saying, who you probably couldn't name and neither could I, who replaced Pruitt, is saying it wasn't me. You know, the reporters are going, yeah, we didn't think it was you. I mean, it's primarily centered around national security concerns. But I do think it's going to turn out to be Kellyanne Conway.
Do you think we're going to find out who it was?
I think we're going to know before you and I talk next week who it was.
Really?
I really do. It's either going to be that or it's going to be a long time.
I think the fun thing here is that, as you said, everyone has come out and denied that it was them, which means one of them's lying and there's no way to know who.
Except for one. John Kelly has not put out a statement of his own.
Oh, has he not?
John Kelly simply pointed to the statement of the press secretary saying, whoever wrote that is a coward, which, by the way, is not saying, and it wasn't me. So that's interesting. But John Kelly has not put out his own statement denying it.
Okay. The pushback against the op-ed has come, obviously, from the White House. It's also come from people on the left and just sort of dispassionate observers saying, if that's the way you feel, then at least have the decency to come out and sign your name to it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's coming from some, this is one of the things that causes me to believe it's Kellyanne Conway.
Who was very critical of Trump at the very beginning of the Republican campaign, too, so
was,
I could see that.
Yeah, when she was working for somebody else, right?
Right, right.
So, I think it's written by someone who is trying to make themselves look heroic for staying and acting as a guardrail to protect the country. You know, there's adults in the room and we're working on this. One of the details that comes out in Woodward's book that is shored up by this op-ed is the notion that there are people in the administration who are working around the president, who are preventing him from doing what he wants to do. And, you know, there comes a point where if they're doing that, they're breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably what's going to happen is there's going to be a whole bunch of people who are going to step forward real quick and say, I am Spartacus, you know, and I did it, you know, and it's all going to be about, I shouldn't go to jail because I was trying to protect the country.
This is not the first time. We talk about the Trump presidency as being unprecedented.
Yeah,
and one of the
word.
Points, yeah, one of the points that I kind of want to stress is, and this is getting back to like not whitewashing history, like let's be upfront about the history of this country.
Right.
And if we are, then we have to recognize that there's a lot of really nasty stuff about the Trump presidency that we've seen many times before,
right?
Because it's not like we had a pristine history and then Trump came along. We've seen a lot of this in the past. And one of the things I remember from reading And the Band Played On, which was Randy Schultz's history of the early years of the AIDS crisis and the response to it on the ground and the federal government's response slash lack of response to it.
Right.
And there's a passage in that book about a federal official who was working in the Reagan White House at the time. That person saying very much the same thing that this editorial writer did this week, which is, there were a lot of really horrible ideas that were being tossed around in the White House, and there were people in the White House who considered it their job to very quietly put the kibosh on those so that we didn't have even worse policies come out than
before.
Yeah,
we know it's bad, but if it weren't for us, it would be so much worse.
Right.
And you know, there's this story in Woodward's book that has Gary Cohn, the chief economic advisor, picking up an executive order off the president's desk and putting it in his pocket and walking out of the Oval with it so that Trump wouldn't sign it. And I thought, well, yeah, you guys are all big heroes. How come none of you saw fit to pick up the order for separating these children from their parents? Nobody saw the reason to step in about that.
Who's on the water cooler this weekend?
You know, that's an awfully good question. Because I've been away this week, I'm actually not sure what the answer is.
It's going to be on.
We know it'll be on Sunday at 1 and 8 p.m. and Saturday morning at 4 a.m. And I think it might be Penny Rich and her mom and Dolores Bailey from The Mother's Day Show, which was such a great show. I could listen to it all day.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And anyone listening out there, check out the Weekend Water Cooler this Sunday, 1 p.m., 8 p.m. You can get the full archive on our website, chapelboro.com. Go to the
archive.
WCHL On Demand page for that. Gene Bolick, thank you so much.
Thank you.